Stillman and Company, delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube every day. Presented by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst, will join us in about 25 minutes or so. Great weekend to college football. I got to tell you, I was a little surprised, Arkansas. A little surprised. I have a giant Razorback. Well, I'll just leave it at that. I just love Sam Pittman at Arkansas. And I actually
look back. You do love him at Arkansas.
I look back, like, a tweet from November 7th of last year, the day that TriStar Moving moved my house from the other side of Green Hills to this side of Green Hills. Mm-hmm. The day that they moved was the Tennessee-Arkansas game. And I went back and I saw that I had tweeted out that day, Sam Pittman is a terrific coach. And I stand by it. I love him. Can't wait to talk to Trevor about Sam Pittman. And by the way, Jimbo Fisher and his $100 billion per year that they've given him fully guaranteed till the end of time might want to get him to find a quarterback. By the way, and I'll rip on Jimbo in a little bit. There's another thing that drove me crazy, but it is time for Headlines with Caroline.
We're spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman and Company, right here on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Headlines with Caroline, presented by Fiero Tequila, the spiciest infused tequila on the market. The world belongs to the brave.
Got some betting headlines for you. So a little Headlines with Caroline, Caroline's mashup here. But Ole Miss quarterback Matt Corral has emerged as the Heisman favorite after week four. Huge improvement from his preseason odds of 50-1, now down to about 3-1. So his odds are at plus 160. Following very close behind him at plus 200 is Bryce Young. So Ole Miss plays Alabama this weekend. And I think that this game, Ole Miss-Alabama, has so many implications. SEC West leader, and I think also the Heisman. Because winner of this game, the odds are going to completely shift in their favor. Spencer Rattler began the season as the consensus Heisman favorite, now has 25-1 odds to win. Desmond Ridder behind Matt Corral and Bryce Young at 18-1 odds, and Georgia quarterback JT Daniels at 30-1 odds. So Matt Corral has written himself a nice little Heisman resume so far this season.
So I think I think this is a huge game as far as, you know, the Heisman race is concerned. I've never been one that cares much about the Heisman. Like,
why?
I don't care about MVP awards.
It's the greatest honor in football.
Winning the championship is the greatest honor.
Individual honor.
Right. And I don't, you know, MVPs and, you know, what, like the things that get me, like the Miami Hurricanes when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Or even last year, you know, was an example where Mac Jones and Devontae Smith both went. And it's like,
well, it's the best players on the best teams.
But, like, how do you pick who's, like, you know.
Because one success comes from the other.
I don't, you know. I'll put it to you like this.
Okay.
I think there are four teams in the SEC. That there are four legitimate dynamite teams. Alabama, mm-hmm. Georgia, mm-hmm. Ole Miss, mm-hmm. Arkansas. And I don't know how you rank them.
You love Arkansas.
I think Arkansas is going to get blown out this week against Georgia. But I do love Arkansas. Because I don't think people remember how recently Arkansas was terrible. And they were terrible.
Well, in 2020, I picked them as my one team in the SEC to not win a single game. Because that's how bad they were.
And that's how far they've come. Now, again, I think they're going to get blown out by Georgia on Saturday. But those are the four teams right now. And I think that however it shakes out between them, your Heisman winner probably comes from there.
Mm-hmm.
Or it comes from whoever just lights up the stats to a point that you're like, wow. You know, I mean, because the kids out in the Pac-12, they don't get enough eyeballs on them to be able to probably win the Heisman. The Big 12's a mess this year. The ACC's the worst Power 5 conference I've ever seen since it went from 6 to 5 when they got rid of the Big East.
Mm-hmm.
This is the worst Power 5 conference I've ever seen, what the ACC is.
It's bad.
So forget about them. It's never going to be a group of 5 kid unless, you know, somebody goes out and has 2,000 receiving yards.
And that's my thing with Desmond Ridder and also with Cincinnati getting into the college football playoff.
Cincinnati, like, might have a chance to get in the playoff because this year
it just feels like a stretch. But yes, if there is a year, it's going to be this year because you're probably not going to see Clemson or another ACC representative.
I'd throw one other person in this mix. Cone from Notre Dame. Because
okay.
Notre Dame's going to be on TV a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame's undefeated. I don't know what Notre Dame schedule's like the rest of the way. I'm not much of a Notre Dame guy, but the ACC's probably not getting a team. And I'd be surprised if the Pac-12 or Big Ten doesn't lose a spot. And I think Notre Dame could get back into playoff. And Jack Cohn, I thought Jack Cohn played great Saturday against Wisconsin.
Oh, Notre Dame smacked Wisconsin. I picked Wisconsin to win that game.
So if Notre Dame is really, really good, I could see, you know, if you can't differentiate any of these SEC quarterbacks and Jack Cohn does, I could see Jack Cohn getting the nod. But I still think it's really, really early. What's next?
Another little betting tidbit here. Kyler Murray has emerged as the 2021 NFL MVP favorite. So he jumped ahead of Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, who were the favorites last week after their losses on Sunday. So Kyler currently stands at plus 700 after week three. Mahomes, Brady, and Matthew Stafford all sitting at plus 800. But some of the biggest line movements in terms of NFL MVP.
Well, let me guess. Derek Carr?
No.
Some of the biggest movements for week three.
Mm-hmm.
And it's none of the guys you've already...
Not biggest, but just like most notable.
And it's none of the guys you've already mentioned?
One of the guys
Stafford.
I mentioned. Stafford went from 900 to 800.
Yeah.
Josh Allen went from 1,600 to 900. Justin Herbert went from plus 4,000
so that's the one that I
to plus 1,100 after beating the Chiefs.
So the way they like to give out the MVP is the guy who people aren't expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked about this before the Arizona game. You know, could this be Kyler's breakout season, like it was Lamar Jackson's breakout and was league MVP, like it was Mahomes' breakout and he was league MVP. And I think
through
Herbert,
3 weeks, it feels like it could be.
I think Herbert's kind of a similar guy, right? Like Herbert's in California, in Los Angeles, and the NFL wants these Los Angeles teams to work. Like they want them to be popular. They're not, but they want them to be popular. So they'll be on national TV. He beat the Chiefs. You know, he's the part. The one name after last night that I would not overlook is Dak Prescott. That division is so bad that Dallas should win it. Like, I'm still not convinced Dallas is a good team, but they beat the Chargers.
I don't think they're a bad team.
They beat the Eagles. They're going to beat the Giants. Mm-hmm. They're going to beat quarterbackless Washington. I'd watch out for Dak in all of this. But, no, I mean, it's so early with this stuff. I think right now the three favorites for me would be Murray, Stafford, Herbert, because it's all about, you know, excitement and a big name, but that wasn't, you know, what we expect every year like we do Brady, Mahomes, and Rodgers and those guys.
But to your point, I am surprised that Derek Carr isn't in here, because while I don't think that he will be NFL MVP, and while I do think the Raiders will eventually kind of drop off a little bit, they're on a heater, and they feel like they're America's favorite team right now.
Gosh,
I mean, people are eating the Raiders up.
I think the Raiders are the poster child for be careful of September football.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think everybody is careful enough with Denver. Like, they...
Yeah.
Have you seen the record of Denver's opponents?
I have not.
0-9. So I think everybody is pretty cautious with the Broncos before we get on the train and say, Vic Fangio, coach of the year, Bridgewater, comeback player. Like, you know, it's a little early.
Teddy Bridgewater out as comeback player of the year.
But I think we need to pump the brakes on the Raiders for a little bit, because the Raiders barely beat Baltimore, barely beat Miami in both games in overtime. And I know that the league is all made up of these close games that you win at the end, and I get that. But it's a nice start for Gruden and the Raiders. History tells me Derek Carr is not one of the best quarterbacks in the league. History tells me Gruden's not one of the best coaches in the league. And the Raiders have drafted so poorly over the last handful of years. Ultimately, when you've got to play the Chargers twice, you've got to play the Chiefs twice, feel like it'll catch up to you. What's next?
So last week I mentioned that Josh Gordon, after being suspended indefinitely for the sixth time from the NFL for violating the league's substance abuse policy, he applied to be reinstated by the league on Friday. It was announced that he had been reinstated. He passed all of his random drug tests after he applied for the reinstatement. So he's officially reinstated into the NFL, and he will sign with the Kansas City Chiefs. He'll be added to their practice squad and elevated to the active roster after conditioning, after getting a solid understanding of the playbook. But, yeah, Josh Gordon going to the Chiefs.
You know, I mean, weed's legal in enough places now where, like, I think Josh – and now they got – like, now there are places here, and I don't know if Curation CBD that sponsors the Midday Show, I don't know if they do this or not. I have no idea. But if they do, then go see them. But I found out that apparently, and I'm not like a, you know, I'm not one of these guys that's like, you know, wearing like the Puff Puff Pass t-shirts.
If you'd like to wear that, you're more than welcome.
Pass. But.
Puff Puff Pass.
Puff Puff
Pass. Heyo.
But like now you can buy, like there's some bill that was passed. So you can buy like weed in like grains. And if there's a more grain to weed, then you can do it. And like the NFL, I don't even think they test for it anymore. So like.
And like in, I want to say Massachusetts, you can buy weed legally as long as it's a gift for someone. Like you can't buy it for yourself, but you can gift it. It's the stupidest thing in the world, but it's some sort of loophole that they were able to get past. That it's not just CBD, it's weed. It's legal marijuana, but you just have to gift it to someone.
Knock yourself out. Somebody told me that I was in Arizona with one of my friends, and my friend in Arizona, you know, loves it.
Yeah.
And they told me that when they go to the stores that you can buy this stuff at, mm-hmm. that there's like the medical side and then the non-medical side, and there's two separate checkout lines, but that it's all the same.
Like all the same stuff?
Yeah, so that when she goes in, it's like hooked around the door for the non-medical side, and there's like one person in line on the medical side.
I wonder why.
So all these
rules, I guess like if you need it like medicinally, you're able to circumvent all the people that are just coming in to smoke. I don't know.
I think all this stuff is
so many stupid rules. Just make it legal.
Like I think gambling, you know, like that was a no-no for forever, and now everybody does it.
Now there are ads everywhere. Now we have the Caesars Superdome in New Orleans.
But is it like is any of it bad? Like has anybody had whatever?
If anyone's life is significantly worse because sports betting is legal or because weed is basically legal,
yeah,
because Josh Gordon. I mean, I'm sure Josh Gordon's life is significantly better if weed is legal.
Those are headlines with Caroline, presented by Fiero Tequila. Fiero Tequila, the world's spiciest infused tequila on the market because the world belongs to the brave. Coming up next, I do have a man crush on Sam Pittman at Arkansas. But is there something telling about the way in which he has turned that program around that maybe makes us feel a little differently about some of the teams that we have been waiting to get turned around? We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company, Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst in 10 minutes. So I have a man crush on Sam Pittman. I love Sam Pittman.
Okay, do whatever you like.
And
here's
why I love Sam Pittman at Arkansas so much. They were so bad. I remember 2 years ago being at SEC Media Days and like walking through the different rooms and whatever. And I remember walking into a room and there was an Arkansas player that had like a Chucky doll on like his backpack, and it was like motivation for him, or I don't know.
Whatever works for you.
But this was when Chad Morris was the coach, and they were so bad. And it was like, yeah, you know, we feel like last year's 2-10 team, you know, that it just got away from us, and we just feel like this year's team is going to be. And Chad Morris was gone. I mean, they lost to Western Kentucky, and they lost to some other, you know, crap bum state, and he was gone. And they go hire Sam Pittman, who I didn't know much about, offensive line coach at Georgia. Guy gets the job, and honestly, I figured like it was everybody else who'd have the job at Arkansas. They'd be there for a couple years, and then they wouldn't be anymore. John L. Smith was that way. Brett Bielema was that way. Bobby Petrino, for other reasons, was that way. Houston Nutt was that way. Like, you know, I just beat Arkansas.
John
okay.
Morris was that way.
You know, he didn't make it a couple years, but yes, I know what you're saying. And Sam Pittman has turned Arkansas into a top 10 program. Now, I think they're going to lose this week to Georgia. But the fact that the Arkansas-Georgia game is must-watch TV this week, I think, is kind of eye-opening. And Sam Pittman didn't wait for his players to get in here. He's using a combination of Brett Bielema and Chad Morris's players. And I can tell you this, Chad Morris is not a good recruiter. Or at least was not at Arkansas.
It's incredibly difficult to recruit at Arkansas as well.
It is, but I don't, like, they have the facilities and the money. It's not Vanderbilt. Like, they have the facilities at Arkansas. They pay for a top-level SEC program. There's just no kids there. Like, there's kids in Louisiana, there's kids in Georgia, there's kids in Florida, there's kids in Texas, and, like, where's Arkansas getting kids from? But they've already beat Texas, and they beat Texas A&M. And so I wonder this. When it comes to Josh Heupel and us expecting better results, we're told we got to wait. He's got to get his players in. You know, we got to wait. We got to give him time. It's going to take time. Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. They just lost $5 billion to nothing to Georgia. It was 35-0 within the first 8 minutes. And I like Clark Lee. I do. Now, I like Clark Lee, the guy. I was never sold. I hoped he could do it. And I don't know if he can or can't. But I even told Clark, I'm like, dude, this is going to be a hard job now. And I love him, but still. But 69-0. Do we need to give these guys all this time? Pruitt needed time. You know who didn't need time? Dan Mullen didn't need time at Florida. James Franklin didn't need time at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt was too intent with Robbie Caldwell as the coach. James Franklin, with Bobby Johnson's players, goes in there and they're 6-6 the first year in a bowl game. They're 8-4 the second year. They're 9-4 the third year. So James Franklin didn't need time. Nick Saban had one bad year at Alabama, and they were competing for the national title in year two. Urban Meyer won the national title at Florida in year two.
Okay, and what is Nick Saban?
He's
the greatest college football coach of all time.
What's Sam Pittman?
Okay, but yes. But
what's
James
Franklin?
I don't think that they're the best football coaches of all time. But you named Dan Mullen, who did not inherit that much of a mess at Florida. I
mean, McElwain.
Sam Pittman inherited much bigger of a mess than Dan Mullen did.
Oh, I mean,
I think Josh Heupel inherited a bigger mess.
I argue that what Sam Pittman is doing at Arkansas is more impressive. You can argue it. I'm not arguing it, but I think you can argue what Sam Pittman inherited at Arkansas and what he's turned them into today is as impressive, if not more impressive, than what Nick Saban inherited at Alabama and what he turned them into by year two.
I don't think it's more impressive. I think it's incredibly impressive what he's been able to do. But there's such a small group of college football coaches that have been able to do that. And it's incredibly impressive. And I think that they deserve credit for that.
Like Dabo didn't do that.
No, Dabo didn't do that.
Ryan Day didn't do that.
So to expect Josh Heupel and Clark Lee to do the same thing, I don't think is fair. When you're saying Nick Saban did it at Alabama, and now he's the most winningest coach in college football history. Sam Pittman has done it in Arkansas, which has been incredible because Arkansas was nothing short of a complete disaster.
It was awful.
Fewer than
awful.
2 years ago. And
start his career during the, like, I mean,
during one of the most difficult
starts his career and 2 months later, it's
in
hey,
college
COVID.
Football. Yeah. Exactly.
2 months later, everybody go home. Everybody stay home. Everybody shut everything down.
And James Franklin was able to do it at Vanderbilt. Granted, what, 8-4 seasons, which at Vanderbilt, you could say is
like winning a national title.
Miraculous. So, yeah, there's such a small group of college football coaches that have been able to make such a 180 turn like Sam Pittman has done. You know, Nick Saban turning Alabama into a dynasty, a powerhouse, incredibly impressive. Sam Pittman being able to take Arkansas out of the dumps and turn it into a team that now plays Georgia and college game day is going there.
I mean, Hugh Freeze did that, but they cheated. You know, like, but he, I guess he did that too, but again, he, you know, he broke the rule.
There are very few coaches that have been able to make such a 180 turn so quickly. So to say that Josh Heupel and Clark Lee are on the same clock as Sam Pittman, I don't think is necessarily fair.
See, here's what I don't like, though, is that two separate times I've put really high demands on the Tennessee football coach, and each time you're like, well, that's not fair. I'm telling them they've got to go get the next Peyton Manning. They have to get that franchise Heisman-caliber quarterback. And you're like, well, that's not fair. And I'm like,
I'm not saying it's not fair. It's incredibly difficult. And it's easy for you to say, go find the best quarterback in
college
football.
But if you want Mark Stoops results, then you can do things the Mark Stoops way, where it took years at Kentucky to build and build and build. And Kentucky's fine. But they've never, I don't think Kentucky has ever, you know, gotten to a point to where we were considering them a legitimate, you know, competitor to these teams in the SEC. And that's where you want Josh Heupel to be if you're a Tennessee fan. And that's where, like, Clark Lee, you know, I know that, look, he's got somebody else's players, but he shouldn't be losing 69-0. I don't care. You should not lose that game. I didn't even watch it. I did like their uniforms, though. I flipped over, and I liked the Vandy uniforms. But, like, I'm just saying that keep telling you, give coach time, give coach time, give coach time. No one said give Arkansas time. They were winning last year. And I think there's no doubt, Sam Pittman, they're going to get blown out, I think, this week by Georgia. I think Georgia are going to kill them.
I don't know if they're going to get blown out.
Especially if the quarterback's hurt.
That's true.
But, I mean, if the quarterback wasn't hurt, they'd have smoked A&M. That would have been 43-14 if the Jefferson kid didn't get hurt. Arkansas is impressive. And I just think, like, okay. The other thing, too, about this, think about all the coaching hires over the years where it's like, oh, I don't know. God, that guy's a terrible coach. He's awful. Or we love this coach that we hired. Heard everybody talk about Scott Frost at Nebraska. I didn't hear anybody talking about Sam Pittman at Arkansas.
They were ready to put up a statue of Scott Frost before he even coached it down.
I didn't even hear about that. Joe Rexroad talked about Nick Saban when he covered him at Michigan State, mm-hmm. took the LSU job, was like, you going to LSU? Worked out pretty well. 615-737-1025. Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst, joins us next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and as always, we're streaming on the Game Nashville app. Stillman & Company, we are delivered by TriStar Moving. A wild weekend in college football, whether it was Notre Dame smoking Wisconsin, Arkansas giving the business at times to Texas A&M in Jerry World, Tennessee putting up a fight for a half against Florida, Georgia winning 69-0. The ACC is a mess, and it is just crazy. And Trevor Maddich joins us, ESPN college football analyst. As always, Trevor, brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, I got like 18 different places I want to start with you, but I want to start with my new man crush, Sam Pittman at Arkansas. And we were just talking about the fact that 2 years ago, Arkansas was an embarrassment under Chad Morris. They were losing to Western Kentucky. They were losing to, you know, 1AA schools. And all of a sudden, they're in the top 10. They had a good year last year, really a great year for them. And now they beat Texas A&M, big one with Georgia this week. But my question is, in the, you got to give coaches time. You know, we got to get my players in here. I've got the old guys' players. How has Sam Pittman done it at Arkansas when things were so bad before he got there?
Love and belief. Literally those two things. The team, Arkansas, actually sent a letter to the athletic director saying that they wanted Pittman to come back and be their head coach. And to his credit, the athletic director took that to heart. And when Pittman got there, he proved why. I mean, what they had to do immediately in order to be successful was two things. They had to have everybody buy in and grind and grind and grind to be as good as they could possibly be and have no prima donnas, no laziness, everybody laser focused on the goal. And then they had to develop players. I mean, the coaches had to develop guys into better football players than they were before Pittman got there. He did both of those things. And fortunately, he got there with an offensive line that was big and powerful enough to be able to develop into what he wanted them to be. Defensive front became tough as well when you're a line of scrimmage focused team. If one side of the line is great, the other side had better pick up the pace or they'll get smashed in practice. And so iron sharpened iron there, and they got better at the line of scrimmage. And KJ Jefferson, a quarterback, has done a fantastic job, but it's all because of Pittman. It's the effect that he has on the players, the way he got the players to believe, to buy in, and then to reciprocate the love that he has for them, because he loves those guys, loves those guys. As a matter of fact, when he loves those guys. And so that's how you get it done. It's the same way that Indiana got it done as well with their head coach, the same kind of culture that had a program that was struggling for many, many years rise up and be a lot better than people thought. It wasn't the addition of new players. It was the way the players loved their coach. And that in turn meant they loved each other, and that in turn meant that they worked harder than they ever would have worked.
As far as impressiveness in the SEC, I think there have been three coaches that have, you know, inherited a mess and turned it around immediately. I think Pittman is one of them. I think Nick Saban taking over Alabama and having them competing for a title 2 years later and winning one 3 years later is up there. And I think James Franklin taking over a 2-10 Robbie Caldwell Vanderbilt team and turning them into 6-6 and then 2 years of 8-4. I think those are the three most impressive quick turnarounds in the SEC in the last 20 years. My question for you is this Arkansas turnaround sustainable, and are we looking at a true top 10 team?
If KJ Jefferson, a quarterback, stays healthy, he limped off the field against Texas A&M, but if he's healthy enough to be a real threat in the running game, then yes, this is a legitimate top 10 team, partly because they're really good. And beyond being good, they're a really tough out. It's hard to beat them. They play clean. They don't turn it over a lot. They don't have tons of penalties. You have to actually go out and beat them, and then when you go to hit a guy in an Arkansas helmet, it's going to hurt, right? So you start with that. And the rest of it is that, my goodness, the rest of the top echelon of college football, for the most part, seems to have all kinds of issues. So whether or not you think that Arkansas would have been a top 10 team last year, the year before that with this team is not the question. You know, it's are they one of the 10 best teams today in college football? And given problems that teams like Clemson and Ohio State have had, I say absolutely they're legitimate if KJ Jefferson can be all of KJ Jefferson.
Mm-hmm. Trevor Maddich, our guest, brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trev, Tennessee goes on the road to Florida. I thought they fought hard for a half. I had two takeaways about Josh Heupel after the game. One, he's going to scheme up guys getting open, and I mean getting open for touchdowns. And sometimes they hit the throw, sometimes they don't hit the throw. Very impressed with the way that he's going to be able to get guys open when he gets better players in there. But 85 penalty yards for Tennessee. They had a punt return where both players wearing number one ran off the field and had nine players. And Florida, punting from their own 20, ended up getting a touchback out of it. And just little discipline issues, plus Heupel's clock management, very questionable at the end of the half. And sometimes I worry about these offensive coaches managing play calling and running the game. So I saw some things that I like and some things I don't like about Heupel in the game Saturday. What did you take away? And are those long-term things that we should be thinking about with Josh Heupel?
Everything that you said was fair. Everything. And now, you know, the other side of it is that he had an awful lot to think about, didn't he? Mm-hmm. He's got his backup quarterback in there. He's playing against a team that just took Alabama to the ever-loving end of the wire, right? And he has to have his team playing perfectly, and he's watching them not execute. And so, you know, there's a lot in his mind right now. At the same time, you're right about the clock management. You're right about the special teams gap, things like that. But I think the first thing you said is what actually is the most important thing, and that is that they are scheming to get guys open, and they're not even going at the fast pace that he really wants to go. Both quarterbacks, Hooker and Milton, have been fast kind of at some times, but other times they haven't been able to be as fast as he wants them to run the operation. Even so, you've got Tennessee Volunteers running wide open, you know, 10, 15, and more yards down the field, especially the more, you know. And Hooker hit Peyton on that beautiful 75-yard touchdown pass along the right sideline. For those who didn't see it, Peyton was open. He was on left sideline, I'm sorry. He was wide open, but at the same time, that ball was thrown high in the air and dropped right down in perfect stride. Peyton just caught it and kept on going. If they had more of those, they would have beat Pitt. If they had more of those, they would have given more of a game in the second half to Florida. And the coaches scheme to make that happen. The receivers are doing their job to get open. But too often on plays like that 75-yard touchdown, you would see Peyton running wide open, and the ball would sail 5 yards, 10 yards over his head, right? And you just didn't get it completed. Now, in fairness to the quarterbacks, in the second half, you also had a whole bunch of drops. So, you know, on the one hand, you look at the results. Okay, they lost those two games, and, you know, and they had a chance. But it's that chance that I think people need to hang their hat on, because Tennessee is coming off of a pretty long stretch of a whole lot of misery. And now all of a sudden they're seeing that they are a mid-to-deep passing connection with more consistency away from being able to compete with most teams that they're going to play. And that just means the quarterbacks need to hit it and the receivers need to catch it. Well, that's pretty close. And so I think of all the problems that you can point to that are real, we have pointed to problems with the Volunteers in the past and have not had a glimpse of a brighter future. And right now, Tennessee fans see that glimpse, so they just have to connect on those deeper passes like they did on that long one, Hooker to Peyton.
Trevor, Clemson loses to NC State. I mean, they looked awful. Especially offensively, trying to move the football. DJ Uiagalelei, you know, it looked a lot like the Georgia game, but they weren't playing Georgia. They were playing NC State. How concerned should Clemson fans be who thought that this dynasty was never going to end?
They should be incredibly concerned, because the dynasty you're talking about is make the playoffs and occasionally win the national championship, right? Mm. Well, the dynasty of winning the ACC is in jeopardy as well. It's very possible, not probable yet, but very possible that Clemson will not win their own conference this year because the offense just can't bust the grape, and they've got injuries now on defense that are a problem. You know, they already lost one stud defensive tackle, and Brian Brzee, another stud defensive tackle, we just found out is out for the year. He was the ACC rookie defensive or defensive rookie of the year last year as a true freshman. Brzee was. He's gone now. Skalski, their leader at middle linebacker, is banged up. And so, you know, the defense might not be as much of a brick wall as it was against Georgia when they held the Bulldogs without an offensive touchdown in the opener, right? But the real problem is really hard to fix, Jared, because it's not that quarterback DJ Uiagalelei is not in a rhythm. He's not. But that could be more fixable. You can take a young quarterback and build his confidence and give him plays that he can hit and run the ball well and start to get some rhythm. The problem is Clemson is unable to generate any offensive rhythm at all because their offensive line couldn't block me and you. Mm-hmm. I mean, their offensive line has been performing as badly as any offensive line of a ranked team that I've ever seen. And so DJ Uiagalelei has got no time to throw. And when he does, he hears footsteps, and I don't blame him because sometimes he'll drop back to pass and there's a defensive pass rusher back there about as fast as he is. Other times he'll have plenty of time, but he's rattled because of that. And so far he doesn't have the poise that Bryce Young has shown, although Bryce Young has a better running game and a better offensive line, but Bryce Young has also shown under pressure that he has a lot of poise. Uiagalelei has shown that under pressure, it feels like watching him, he's thinking, uh-oh, here we go again, what do I do? And so that's a problem, but it starts with the offensive line. And it's not just the passing game. I mean, I was watching them on tape this week, looking for breakdowns for this week for Georgia, actually. And there were plenty of times when in the Georgia game, there were Bulldog defensive linemen so deep in the backfield on a running play that the running back would take the handoff and immediately get hit by a D lineman that was as deep as the running back was. Mm-hmm. And so this problem with the offensive line has to be solved before we can expect a whole lot more to go on. Now, what do? Because you're the quarterback, you're the offensive coordinator. Now you've got an issue that you know about. You still have to call plays. You still have to go out and try to win games. So what you need to do is throw the ball a lot more to the running backs, run a lot more pick plays, just a lot more of the kind of play that'll get a guy open quickly and try to bypass the offensive line. That's all you can do. And right now they're not doing that well either.
Trevor Maddich with us. Trevor, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. I want to get Trevor's thoughts on Notre Dame because I thought they were very impressive Saturday, and they got a big one against Cincinnati. So I want Trevor's thoughts on that. I want Trevor's thoughts on Alabama, Ole Miss, Arkansas, Georgia, and we will do that plus the four teams in the playoff because I think it's going to be wide open. We'll get Trevor's thoughts on that coming up next. Stillman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Trevor Maddich is with us, ESPN college football analyst. Trevor is presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters, Trev, big weekend of college football. And I know that like people love to go on television and say things like, it's going to be a big weekend of college football. Check out our slate. And most of the time I'm looking and I'm like, yeah. Like last week, the ABC game of the week, no disrespect to ABC, we love ABC, but the ABC game of the week was West Virginia, Oklahoma. No, thank you. This week, we've got Alabama, Ole Miss, Arkansas, Georgia, Notre Dame, Cincinnati. I mean, we've got a slate of games. Even Florida, Kentucky, I think is, you know, an interesting game, you know, whatever. So, Trevor, I want to start with this. I watched Notre Dame play Wisconsin on Saturday. I was very impressed with Notre Dame. Now, I think that watching Big Ten football and watching Notre Dame is like watching paint dry. But I think Notre Dame's got a quarterback. I love this Jack Cohn kid that they have. And they play, I think they're better than they were last year. And they made the playoff last year. And I look at Cincinnati, and I watched them play Indiana earlier this year, and they because I know that Clemson's not a top 10 team, and Oklahoma doesn't look great, and Ohio State doesn't look great, and I mean Cincinnati, maybe they are a college football playoff caliber team. Let's start with that game. What do you think, and how big is that game as far as the playoff could be concerned?
It is enormous as far as the playoffs are concerned. The Notre Dame schedule is not looking as tough as it did originally, and you know Wisconsin is the team that has struggled and has looked really bad, especially on offense with quarterback Graham Mertz. And then USC, you know, just lost to Oregon State, right? Mm-hmm. Stanford is an up-and-down team. So Notre Dame has to be undefeated. And for Cincinnati, they were undefeated at the end of last season in the regular season and lost a tight one to Georgia in the bowl game. But even though they were undefeated, they didn't make it into the top four. This year, with the win over Indiana and with a potential win at Notre Dame, that might be enough to get Cincinnati into the top four, especially because of the chaos we're seeing up at the top. And so this is enormous for both teams. And it's a really interesting matchup because I think a lot of people will look at it and say, well, Notre Dame is going to have more talent. No, no, actually, no, they don't. They are quite similar teams in a lot of ways. They're really good at running back. They both have good members of the offensive line, but at left tackle especially, they've got some young guys that they're playing, and they're struggling there. They both have solid defenses. Notre Dame's defense has really nothing over Cincinnati's defense except Kyle Hamilton at safety for the Irish. He's irreplaceable. He is phenomenal. But everything else is good. The biggest difference to me in this game from a matchup standpoint is that Notre Dame's quarterback is either going to be Jack Cohn, who's banged up, who's not mobile, and who's been okay as a game manager. But keep in mind that they struggled to beat Florida State, who still hasn't won a game, Toledo at home, MAC team that people aren't picking to win the MAC this year, and then Purdue at home. And so they haven't really blown anybody out with Jack Cohn at quarterback, and now Jack Cohn might not play. And if he doesn't, the backup, Tyler Buckner, might not play. And that's why when he went out of the game against Wisconsin last week, third-string freshman quarterback Drew Pine had to come in. And Pine actually played much, much better than anyone expected and actually threw a great touchdown pass in that game to help him win. But that's the difference in this game because the quarterback situation for Notre Dame is a mess right now because of injury and youth. The quarterback situation for Cincinnati is a massive advantage for the Bearcats. Desmond Ridder has been around forever. He is a Heisman candidate. He is a terrific running quarterback who has upped his game as a passer, especially downfield from last season to this, which is why he's a Heisman candidate. And you look at that one position, the most important position on the field, and the edge goes decisively to Cincinnati before the game. Now you got to play the game. We'll see what happens. But for Irish fans, if they like to have angst, and there's a lot of reason to have angst because this Cincinnati team coming in has every ability to beat them.
Trev, what do you think of the quarterback matchup, Matt Corral versus Bryce Young, and does Ole Miss have enough on defense to get it done against Alabama?
That's the question. This is going to be one of the best quarterback matchups of the season, and you're right about that. Matt Corral of Ole Miss, people are saying, is the Heisman front runner right now, and he's as good a pick as anybody, although I would really pick Bryce Young to be the Heisman front runner right now. So both of these teams at quarterback are looking solid. The question is, though, the defense of Ole Miss. They've gotten better. They've improved from heinous to decent, to pretty good. I mean, okay, not great, but that's still a big improvement. And the offense is playing lights out. Keep in mind that last year it was a huge high-scoring game. I mean, it was tight in the fourth quarter until Alabama pulled away. But Ole Miss scored 48 points on them last year. 48 points. And Ole Miss's offense is better this year than it was last year. Alabama's defense has more holes in it this year than they did last year when they played Ole Miss. So this is an interesting game. I think it's going to be very high scoring, but the storylines from this are just huge. I mean, one is to take the torch from Nick Saban. That's always the storyline of the SEC West. But if Lane Kiffin can be that guy, remember Lane Kiffin a few years ago was the offensive coordinator for Alabama in the national championship run.
Sure.
He did something so egregious, and I still don't know exactly what it is, that Nick Saban, who abhors distractions, publicly fired his offensive coordinator, Lane Kiffin, the week before they played in the national championship game, and they ended up losing that game. Nick Saban normally would have just banished Lane Kiffin to an office somewhere and said, look, do your thing, get ready for your next job, which he was doing at Florida Atlantic, part of the problem. Don't say a word, and we'll move on without you. Instead, Saban went public with the firing, right? Something happened. And ever since then, Kiffin has been poking Saban with a stick, trolling Nick Saban. It has been tremendous fun. If Kiffin is able to pull this off, the trolling will be delicious. There's so many great storylines.
Trevor Maddich with us. I think that Arkansas, and you know I love Sam Pittman, I think Arkansas gets blown out this weekend against Georgia. I mean, the one thing that we were talking about, you know, the Titans play up and down to their opponents, and usually somebody that plays up and down to their opponents isn't very good. Georgia did not do that on Saturday against Vanderbilt. I have a hard time not thinking that with their defense that they're the best team in the country. What do you think of the Arkansas-Georgia matchup?
No, I agree with you there. I think the defense that Arkansas pushed around last week of Texas A&M is a legitimate defense. I mean, it's one of the best in the country. But this Georgia defense is – it has a chance to be legendary. I'm watching them on tape, too. I mean, today we just set up a breakdown. We had, like, three different breakdowns we could have done on the abject awesomeness of the Georgia defense, the unblockability of the defensive linemen, of the linebackers, of the scheme, that even if you could block them physically, you still have to figure out where they're coming from. This Georgia defense, I use the word legendary. I've never done that before. I've always said this is one of the best defenses in the country. This is the best. It's a brick wall. I've never said it has a chance to be legendary. And, you know, it starts up front with number 99, Jordan Davis. I mean, he's 6'6", 340 pounds, defensive lineman who can run and change direction. And he heads a defensive line that goes about eight deep of guys that you can't really block. When after, you know, about four or five deep, you can't block them. And so, you know, Arkansas is going to run into a bit of a brick wall here. But enjoy this Georgia defense, because we may not see this kind of a collection of players for a long time in college football.
Mm-hmm. How would you go right now, committee, give me your four teams? I saw you do this on SportsCenter the other day, and I was like, you know what, if he's going to do it on SportsCenter, we've got to have him do it on this show. How would you rank your four teams right now?
All right, number four, I've got Oregon.
They beat Ohio
State. They had a close call against – what's that?
I said they beat Ohio State.
Yeah, they beat Ohio State, and Tulsa almost beat Ohio State the next week. So what do we know about that? But they almost lost to Fresno State and to Arizona at home. But still, Oregon is a very complete team. Kayvon Thibodeau is banged up, so we'll see what happens. He's a big part of the reason that they would be highly ranked. At number three, I have Alabama. Because they got pushed around on defense by Florida State. They were outrushed, Florida. They were outrushed 245 yards to 91 against the Gators. Now, they pulled out the win, so you have to give them credit for that. But offensive line and the running attack has been good. It hasn't been dominant against the better teams that they've played. The defense has struggled to stop the run against the best running game that they play. And I want to see them do a little bit better in the trenches to move them up, and they will. At number two, I got Penn State. And it's a real close one with them in Alabama. But Penn State's defense has been lights out in the red zone and opportunistically in critical moments of the game. The passing game is just electric down the field. But their running game needs to get a little bit better, too. I've got them just a hair above Alabama. And if Bama wins this week against Ole Miss, I'll move them up. And number one is Georgia. Georgia is just right now unassailable by anybody except Alabama if Bama fixes the problems in the trenches.
Trevor Maddich, ESPN College Football Analyst, joining us as always, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Great weekend ahead. Trevor, we look forward to seeing you on SportsCenter.
Great. Thanks, Jared.
Yep, Trevor Maddich joining us on the program. And, I mean, just listening to him talk about those games sounds like the one he's most fired up for, and I don't want to put words in his mouth. Sounds like it's Cincinnati-Notre Dame.
Trevor loves Cincinnati. He was one team that Cincinnati was one team when I asked him before the season even started, what is a team that people are going to overlook? What is maybe a team that people may look at you funny, but you feel good about maybe making it into the top four? Cincinnati. He is so high on Cincinnati. But I do think that it'll be a very interesting game, because that is the only way, in my opinion, Cincinnati can make it into the college football playoffs, is if they beat Notre Dame and they beat them handedly.
Sure, and then they need, you know, teams to – they need the ACC to be bad. They need the Big Ten to be bad.
But that's kind of working in their favor.
Sure. Oh, sure.
But, like, the one isolated incident that could be the difference between Cincinnati making it to the college football playoff and not is that Notre Dame game.
So I said earlier today that I think the Titans – that I think that their defense is better than it was last year. I think everybody thinks their defense is better than it was last year. But this time last year, I kind of knew that the Titans' defense was a mess. And I even said, like, I know they're 3-0 guys, but I'm not sure that they're very good. This year, I feel like the defense is much better. But it's the offense that is making the mistakes. And we were told it was going to be an elite offense. Do we still believe that that's what the Titans' offense will be? We discuss next. Stillman and Company. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. And, of course, we're streaming on the Game Nashville app. Let me tell you about Light the Night. That's right. Light the Night is coming, and we want you to be a part of it. And I cannot find the read wherever it went. It went somewhere.
It will be a very, very cool event, though.
But, and it'll be virtually. Hold on. I got to hold on. Keep talking for a second.
It'll be a very cool event and very worthy cause. If you're free, if you're able, if you're willing.
Join us in partnering with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Light the Night. Light the Night brings light to the darkness of cancer through hope, research, and support for patients and families. Through this inspirational nationwide movement, we raise awareness and funding for groundbreaking research treatment options to eliminate cancer. Nashville's Light the Night will be virtual and take place on November 4th. Learn more at lightthenight.org/TN. Stillman and Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.